remember the 90s, the like the witch, like they used that noise a lot. Like it was
that was yes. Like, but it had like a bit of a ooh in the background of it. Yeah.
Remember that shit?
I do. That's our new theme song.
Yes. Welcome to Halloween 2024. In this,
lightning crashes.
An old mother dies.
live?
Yeah.
Performing
so,
live.
So it works out, Anthony, that this October we've got 5 Wednesdays.
That's great.
That means we get an extra PCMC Halloween special.
Wonderful.
Because we do specials all October is Halloween for us at PCMC. And this year we're doing Universal Monsters. Dun dun. I'm here with Anthony.
That's exciting.
Gruesome Anthony Buongiorno.
Hello, everyone.
How are you?
I'm feeling really good.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween too. Ready to get into Frankenstein.
Frankenstein. We are talking about which I maybe the best one, just from a technical point of view. Mm-hmm. Either this or Bride of Frankenstein are the best Universal movies. Frankenstein from 1931. This is actually the second in the actual series. Dracula comes out the same year. Dracula comes out February 14th, 1931. Which, by the way, it's not a coincidence that it came out Valentine's Day, because Dracula was seen as like a gothic romantic figure.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And Bela Lugosi, when he played Dracula on Broadway, would get tons and tons of love letters.
I thought you were going to say tons and tons of puss.
I mean, that as well. I mean, that's when we say love letters, that's what we mean. And then Frankenstein is released November 21st, 1931. So It's the same year, the end of the year.
Great.
Frankenstein is directed by James Whale. Mm-hmm. It's written by Garrett Fort and Francis Ferragno. It's based on John Balderdash's adaptation of Mary Shelley's novel. Mm-hmm. Not based on the book, based on the play. I've been reading this book called The Monsters of Universal Studios, written by James L. Nebar. And I got some good information from that book. Bela Lugosi was originally going to play the monster, although he wanted to play the doctor, and eventually it didn't work out. The novel was in the public domain, but the movie is based on a stage adaptation by Margaret Peggy Webling, which Universal bought. In her play, the monster is referred to as Frankenstein as well as the doctor. Jack Pierce is the makeup person who created the monster makeup for Frankenstein. Boris Karloff, this is just trivia I got from the book. Boris Karloff has had a dental bridge, and he took it out, which is what makes his cheeks go in and look hollow.
Oh, I did it. I was wondering about the makeup.
Yeah. The cinematographer was Arthur Edison, no relation to Thomas Edison. It's spelled differently. And just a bit of trivia about him. Arthur Edison was the person who came up with the idea of hiding microphones in the scene, as you saw in Singing in the Rain.
Huh.
One thing to understand about both Dracula and Frankenstein is it's 1931. We're just into the sound era.
Yeah.
27 is the jazz singer. Dracula and Frankenstein both don't have scores. So they've got an eerie silence through most of it.
That stood out to me.
Yes. Especially because as the film has aged, there's a sort of staticky.
So were they, you hear that. Were they filmed with live music? Or were they presented with music?
No.
That was just, they did that for silent films, didn't they?
They did do that for silent films. They also sometimes had lecturers that would narrate it.
So they wouldn't do.
I've never heard. It's possible, but I've never heard of live music with sound.
I'm surprised nobody's gone back and inserted a score.
Well, it feels like it works so well without it. And it seems like what they're doing here is they are really trying to lean, because now we can talk, right? And dialogue means something now. They're really trying to lean into the theatrical of it. Right, because it begins with someone coming out on stage.
My first note is it begins with a creepy MC.
Yeah.
Which is kind of fun. It's like a
Treehouse
of Horror.
Yeah.
He's
lit from beneath.
Don't say I didn't warn you. Yeah. A horror show.
Yeah, he warns you. He mentions the producer who sort of starred the Universal Monsters, Carl Laemmle.
Yeah. Mr. Laemmle wanted me to come out.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that beginning. I like the beginning. But the beginning, do you remember the beginning of Bride?
No, I've never seen
it. Be the in the wraparound for Bride is Mary Shelley, Percy Shelley, and Lord Byron sitting around talking about it, and her telling the story as she's like created it. And Elsa Lancaster, who played the Bride of Frankenstein, also plays Mary Shelley.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah. So I was going to ask you what your history is with this, because I'm going to reveal something about myself.
Oh, my history is, well, in terms of the monsters, I always loved Universal Monsters when I was a kid. I loved Abner Costello, Meet Frankenstein. That's just like fun. I loved the Wolfman. He was my favorite as a kid. I still love the Wolfman, but I don't think it's the best of the films. Mm. I think, hands down, James Whale is the best director of these movies. He also directed The Invisible Man, which I think is... I don't know why I waited so long to see it. It's so underrated. It's so brilliant. Frankenstein, when I was in grad school, I took a class about cyborgs in literature and theory and stuff. And we had to read Frankenstein. So I read it in grad school. So I read it old. I was like already in my late 20s.
You read the novel.
Yes.
Frankenstein. Okay.
And I loved it. I loved reading it. And I was like, wow, my whole life I was like, oh, I should read Frankenstein. I never did it. And someone asked me to do it, so I did it. I want to do that I have not read Dracula yet, and I want to read Dracula. So although I've heard Dracula's not as good as Frankenstein.
The book? No.
Yeah.
Well, my thing is, actually, maybe you didn't know this, but I've like never seen these movies.
Any of them.
I saw Dracula once.
Okay.
But I've read the book, and I've read both Frankenstein and Dracula multiple times.
Really?
For teaching it and for grad school. Like, part of my master's exam was on Dracula. I'd only seen clips of Frankenstein before today.
Right.
But I've read and taught the book multiple times.
Well, the thing is...
So here's my thing.
Please.
I was a little whelmed by it. Like, I didn't love it. And I had some... It was weird. Like, it's only... Weird. It's, like, extremely short.
All of them were. They're, like, 70 minutes.
And it ends... literally when it ended, I was like, that's not the end. This is the end? Like, it feels like it ended in the middle of a scene, almost. It's like the weird dad comes out and he's like, oh, here's to the Frankensteins.
Yeah.
And then it's just over.
Well, then Bride kind of tries to get more of the book. Like him learning to talk comes in the second movie.
Yeah, I knew that all happened in the second
movie.
Although
still not faithful.
Not at all. No.
Well, I think that's the thing you have to accept is that it's in no way a faithful adaptation. And if that's going to be your marker for good or not, you're not going to get it.
No, and that's not... I know it's a different thing, so I don't care about
it's
that.
Also... And this speaks to the length of both Dracula and Frankenstein. It's almost not a movie.
It's like a special.
It's like a happening. Yeah. It's an event. It's such a small little thing.
It's iconic.
Yeah.
So iconic. And I'm familiar with it. I just hadn't sat down and watched it from beginning to end until today. And there was a lot about it that I really liked. And then there was other, and maybe this is just because it's almost 100 years old at this point, where I was like, I wanted there to be like more tension. Mm-hmm. It just feels like the monster comes and then like 10 minutes later, he's gone. Like it's very quick.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we don't even see Dr. Frankenstein go mad.
No.
He's bananas second
and I'm
one.
I'm so familiar with the book that to me, like, I was like, wow, this is like starting in the middle of the book.
But also the book really doesn't get into how he makes it.
No.
A lot of the texture of the movie is all of that shit.
Well, the book is all about a lot about ambition, and like he wanted to be the one to do it. So the book is told through many narratives, and in his narrative, he's like, I've discovered the thing that causes life, but I'm not going to tell you what it is.
Yeah.
And then he's a little bit of an unreliable narrator, and he's like, I'm not going to tell you because I don't want you to do it.
Yeah.
But really, I think it's like, because I want to die with the secret.
Uh-huh.
So it's not explicitly electricity, and there's none of that. I found really funny, and maybe it was supposed to be kind of funny, like, oh man, I got the wrong brain. I dropped the normal brain and I had to go back for the criminal brain. That made me LOL so hard. When it's just like a jar that says criminal brain on
it. Yeah. Well, that's so yes, I do think there is intentional comedy here. But that's what leads us to another level of appreciating this movie, which is James Whale is a queer filmmaker and he is sneaking queer themes into this narrative, and there's camp here, and you see it.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Way it feels more campy.
You see it way more in Bride because he, at that point, is powerful and can do whatever he wants. Bride has insane shit in it. It's like almost a comedy, and then Invisible Man as well. But here, it's still there, but it's more subtle. But there's obvious camp moments in it.
Yeah. The it's part sort where of he the, drops the thing, I literally was like, this feels like Young Frankenstein.
Right. Well, yeah, it happens to Young Frankenstein. Yeah. And also, by the way, I don't like... Yeah, go on, sorry.
No, I was going to say, it also felt like it was made for a dollar, but go ahead.
I don't... well, they actually...
Were they... Well,
they weren't put a lot of money
into it. Yeah, it felt that way. Yeah, even no, for the time,
they were cheap. No, they were cheap movies. Yeah. They were like all moneymakers.
They were standing in front of a backdrop.
Yeah. They were all great moneymakers because they didn't spend a lot on it.
I will say, I think that... and this is jumping around a little bit. I found the Bavarian streets sequence to be really cool and awesome and like visually arresting, especially when the guy's carrying his dead daughter through the streets of Bavaria. I was like, oh, that's really cool. It almost felt like if there was a budget, they like blew their wad on that.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Interesting.
Yeah.
No, there's so much to say. With the brain thing, I actually don't like that because it implies that had it not been a criminal brain, it would have went well.
Yeah.
And it should always be damned. The whole enterprise, the whole endeavor should be doomed.
It feels like a silly extra step.
Yes.
Like in The Shining when they say the hotel's built on an ancient Indian burial ground.
Yes.
And it's like,
you're
you
right.
don't need that. Right. And also it doesn't make any sense at all.
Right. It shouldn't be there.
Right.
Because
the ghosts are not indigenous ghosts.
Right.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
Yeah. But there's so much to say. I don't know if you noticed in the beginning of the credits, two interesting things.
The monster question mark.
And it says from the novel by Mrs. Percy B. Shelley.
Yeah, horrible.
What is this, a wedding invitation? How dare you not use her name?
I know, awful.
Incredible.
Mrs. Percy Shelley.
So both Dracula and Frankenstein are both highly influenced by German expressionist cinema. And in that type of cinema, it's you see the entire world through the perspective, the subjectivity of the central character. Like, for example, there's a famous one called The Man Who Laughs, which is kind of what the Joker is based on. And there's a scene where there's a blind person. No, sorry. Yeah, there's a scene with a blind person and like shit's going on. And the whole scene is just a close up of the person's face and you hear shit happening because you're in his point of view.
Yeah.
You know, like, and you see expressionism has usually have high contrast lighting, like very dark darks and very bright brights. Mm-hmm. And like it's a castle, even though they call it a watchtower.
Yeah.
The trees all jutting in weird directions, everything being arched.
It's visually
great. But that's what's crazy is it's German expressionism, which is wild and kooky, but in some ways earnest.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like queer too, so it's like camp via German expressionism.
Okay, speaking of queer, what did you make of Victor Moritz, the character?
The other character?
Yeah.
The character that they give the name Victor to?
Well, his name is an amalgamation of two characters from the novel, because there's also Justine Moritz.
Okay.
And then there's Victor Frankenstein, weirdly.
Yeah.
But he himself is an analog to Henry Clerval in the novel, whose name is Henry.
Interesting.
So they switched Victor and Henry's name for some reason. He read as queer to me.
Wow, I have a completely different opinion.
Okay, I feel like in the movie, you're supposed to read him as in love with her.
Right.
But I thought that in his mannerisms and his dress, he read as queer. I also think Henry Clerval reads as queer in the original novel.
Okay. See, I read... what's his name? I read Dr. Frankenstein, played by Colin Clive, as queer. Well, he's little dandy.
I did write down that for a mad scientist, he's very handsome and clean cut. And like his hair is well groomed.
But
and
also like they make a huge point of he got engaged, but then he broke off his engagement to go make this monster.
There's something very clear about like, Frankenstein, because it's like, I'm making a perfect man. It's what Rocky Horror picked up on.
But it's also life without
a procreation. Well, yeah.
Like jouissance, right, is the pleasure of sex without the possibility of reproduction.
This is like the opposite of it. Without having to have
sex. This is creating life without it. Like, you know, he, like, at one point he says, I don't think I'll ever, my marriage to Elizabeth won't ever be successful unless I get rid of this monster. Right. It's like the choice is you can be married and have a baby because the Baron, the father, always says, here's to a son.
To a son, yeah.
Right? So you can either be straight and be married to Elizabeth and have sex and have heteronormative sex and have a baby, or you can do the queer thing and create life without sex.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense to me because in my reading of the novel, I always have thought that there was something queer about the relationship between Victor and Henry, his friend, which is what this character is.
Yeah.
Victor and Henry, but their names are swapped.
I think it's so weird that they swapped the names.
It is very weird. And I, just like in the novel, I never really buy that he's very in love with Elizabeth.
Do you think he's in love with Frankenstein?
I think that this is like, again, where Rocky Horror grows out of. I think there's something to be said for like, he wants to create something. He wants to create a man to love because he can't love a man.
Right. Interesting. In real life. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Interesting. Okay.
I didn't know that about the director. It makes total sense that the director was queer.
And he's very well known in like there's a great documentary on Shudder called Queer for Fear. And they talk extensively about him and his movies and who he would cast. He would cast very queer characters.
Yeah.
And queer actors. Yeah. And
the actor who plays the doctor is like a very good looking guy.
Yes. And there's something so clean cut about him too.
He's like well shaved. He has like perfectly groomed hair.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like square jawed and handsome. Not what you'd like expect.
Yeah,
his performance is wild. I wrote down.
He's banana from jump. He's bananas.
I wrote this down. Crazy am I? We'll see if I'm crazy or not. And then he leads them into a room where he's got like a dead body. He's like, I'll show you crazy. I'm about to electrocute this dead body with my little friend here.
But you know, go on.
And I also wrote down that his face when he finds out about the criminal brain is like so funny because he's like, oh, dear.
Yeah.
The criminal brain.
Right. Well, that's another thing that's fascinating about all of these movies, the whole Universal Monsters oeuvre, is that it seems to be about the return of the repressed because it's always about society people. People of money and name and land ownership.
Yeah, well, he's a baron.
Right.
His father's a baron.
And they are proper. And it's about proper life being disrupted by something monstrous and natural.
It's
and
like there's Dr. always. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Right. Yeah. And there's always a tension between the magical and the rational.
Mm.
Right? Like you've got Dr. Frankenstein's watchtower, which is like this German expressionist castle up on a hill, and it looks ancient as hell, but then he's inside of it with all of these technical instruments.
Yeah.
And he's using lightning, and lightning was being experimented with at that time, but it's 100 years before lightning is really before electricity is commercialized and put into people's houses.
Yeah.
So he's sort of like Tesla. Kind of at that point. Also, there's something it's always interesting to go back and watch classics and see that we were wrong about things. One is that he doesn't bring him back with lightning. He has this bullshit about he created a ray.
Yeah.
And he goes, you told me about violet and ultraviolet, but I found the biggest ray that will, the ray of life, and the electricity powers the ray.
Yeah.
Whatever. And the other thing is, the assistant's name is Fritz. Igor does not appear until the son of Frankenstein, and he's played by Bela Lugosi. That's the first Igor.
So,
but somehow
Fritz
Igor
is like Igor, but just with a different name.
But how did Igor become the stereotype of that is the assistant to Frankenstein?
Yeah.
And by the way, in the book, there's no assistant character like that at all.
It actually would take away from the book is all about he goes into solitude and
right.
it's like he's working round the clock by himself to do this thing.
Right.
And he's separated himself from the
right.
world.
Right.
I pulled up a passage from the book because I wanted to get your just I thought this was interesting. I don't in the book, one of the major plot points is that he saves a little girl from drowning. Mm-hmm. But in the movie, he causes a little girl to drown.
By accident. Yeah.
I'm not going to read it, but it's interesting because it's he sees a little girl drowning. This is after he's been banished by Frankenstein and he's out in the world. He sees a little girl drowning. He saves her. And then when her father comes by, he shoots him because he sees how hideous he is. And that is the moment. I just wanted to read that one line. That is the moment when he decides that he hates mankind. Mm. Yeah, so he says, so he gets shot. He says, but this was a luxury of sensation that could not endure. I became fatigued with excess of bodily exertion and sank on the damp grass in the sick impotence of despair. There was none among the myriads of men that existed who would pity or assist me. And should I feel kindness toward my enemies? No. From that moment, I declared everlasting war against the species and more than all against him who had formed me and sent me forth to this unsupportable misery. Mm-hmm. So he saves this little girl. When the father shoots him because he thinks that he's hurting the little girl, that's when he's like, I declare war on mankind.
Interesting.
It's such an interesting inversion of in the movie where he sees little girl, he goes to play with her and he like playfully tosses her in the...
And then he freaks out when she doesn't float.
Right.
He gets scared and runs away.
Right.
Because he didn't mean to hurt her.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is interesting.
I guess it gets to the same end.
Yeah, because it's around there. Well, he does like attack the old professor.
Yeah.
What's his name? Volder, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
And he does attack... He does kill Fritz.
Yeah.
And he... I don't know. Yeah.
He never, like... He never declares war on mankind. That whole element is not there.
Right.
Which is kind of where I was like, I'm wondering, like, why did he try to kill Elizabeth then?
He doesn't, though. He could, but he doesn't. He just breaks in.
But he hurts her.
She faints, I think.
Okay. I was a little confused. And then it seems like he's choking Frankenstein and then passes out randomly. Why does that happen?
Because they injected him with the sedative.
I don't know why I missed that. Okay. All right. So he doesn't ever actually... And remind me how he kills Fritz. Is it because Fritz is hitting him?
Fritz is scaring him with the fire.
Oh.
And
Which
is interesting because it's intelligent.
Here's
way to
the
kill
thing
somebody.
That I will say I didn't know about this performance. I always pictured Frankenstein as like, ooh, ooh, ooh. But really, he's snarling.
Yeah.
He's very cat like.
Yeah.
And even with the fire.
Well, at the end, when the villagers burn the windmill he's in and he's screaming, I think it's very sad and pathetic. Because he sounds so terrified.
Yeah.
I think he's a very sympathetic character because he didn't ask to be born and then he's brought to life and then he's just tortured and then...
Did you see that one tweet that where somebody was like, wokeism has gone so far that now these libs are saying that the real monster was the doctor. And then somebody tweeted back and they're like, that's the book.
Somebody like, didn't go to English.
That's what the book is about.
In high school.
That's great. He gives a really interesting performance.
It's brilliant.
As the creature. Snarling really stuck with me of like, he's like an animal.
Yeah.
And even there's one point where there's like a close up of him and he does like a full snarl, snarl.
Yeah.
So he's not like, I don't know. I pictured him differently. I think it's evolved into something that is not actually in the performance, the stereotype of it.
Right, right. No, I agree. Yeah, no, of course, yeah.
Why did they, the question mark at the beginning, that's just like a fun thing, right? Like people knew who it was.
Well, he had been in other movies and stuff and I think plays. I think it's just a fun thing. Yeah. Because he is credited at the end.
Okay, yeah.
Supposedly a very nice guy. The little girl who played Maria, she was with the viewer. She said he was very lovely. He was very nice when they filmed that scene. God, there's so much. First of all, let's just talk about just the broader context of the Universal Monsters.
Okay.
There's a lot of cast members the same. So Bela Lugosi doesn't play the monster, but Fritz is played by Glenn Frey, who played Renfield in Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
And then the professor is played by Edward Von Sloan, who played Van Helsing in Dracula. Mm. So it's a lot of the same people. And that happens a lot. Like Lon Chaney Jr. played them all. Lon Chaney Jr. is known for The Wolfman because he originated it. But he also played a version of Dracula, played Frankenstein the Monster, and played the Mummy.
Okay.
He's the only one that played every character. Wow. Yeah, it's crazy.
What do you think of his design? I was struck by his big shoes. He's got some big shoes. In the novel, she says that he's really big because... So she never really gets into like how exactly he creates
this
creature. But he does say the intricacies of human beings was too hard to replicate to size. So everything's a little bit bigger, which is why he came out so big.
Right.
So I think that maybe is like a nod to that.
Yes, I think so.
But it is iconic Frankenstein design, but it is...
I have a couple feelings about this.
Yeah. The flat top is...
Well, I think there's camp there. It's created by Pierce, this makeup person. But you do have Wales as a director, and I think there's an arch to all of this. I really think that he's trying to be scary and entertaining, but I do think he's trying to wink a little bit at the audience. Because again, when he has the ability to go further, look at the Bride of Frankenstein's design.
Mm-hmm.
It's bananas. It's a complete parody. She's got the long hair with the lightning strike.
Standing straight up, yeah.
It's nuts, right? I think it's more that queerness.
I wonder how he looked in the play that this is based
interesting.
On.
I don't know. The flat top is an interesting choice. But you know what I found myself asking, what I was asking myself was, because I always think about context and that every work of art is born of its time and reflects its time. And these movies that did at one point scare people.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, and you know, when I would teach film classes, students would be like, people were dumber then. And it's like, no, that's dumb.
There are no dumb questions except for that one.
That kid had a dumb question. A lot of people have thoughts like that, which is very naive. So that's not it. So I found myself, I tried to imagine a world where I had never seen the monsters. I had never seen an 8-year-old in a Frankenstein costume. I had never seen a Scooby-Doo cartoon. A world where I'm just seeing this image on its own. I think that would be unnerving. I think it would be uncanny enough that you'd be like, what the fuck is this?
I agree. And we've talked about Scream 1,000,000 times. I remember the first time you see Ghostface in the original Scream.
Yes.
Thinking it was the creepiest shit I've ever seen. Because it wasn't in the commercials or the trailer.
Yeah.
And he turns around and you see this like elongated white face.
Yeah.
And I was like, huh, that is so scary. And now Ghostface is so...
I am so glad that you said this because I had the same thought today when I saw something. Look at this that I saw.
Yeah, this is being sold. It's a little plushy, Ghostface.
Instead of black, it's pink.
It's pink, yeah.
It's that pink Halloween aesthetic now, and it's cute Ghostface. And this was, you're right. It was terrifying, and now it's wallpaper. Nothing. It's part of our culture. So I was like, if you didn't know what Frankenstein looked like, and I think there's something arch about the way he comes in backwards, which makes no sense, and then he turns. And then there's like you jump cut into his face.
Mm.
His expression is a little different than it was a second ago. And then jump cuts again closer. And you're like brought super close to him. I could see it being unnerving to an audience at that time.
I mean, we were just, you talked about Long Legs recently. And like the first time you see Long Legs' face, it's like, oh.
Yeah.
But then even by the end of the movie, you're like, okay, he's like a weird guy with a weird face.
Here we are like a month or two later, and it's a meme already. Like, yeah. You see long leg shit online all the time, and it's like, I'm already desensitized to it.
Yeah,
I think being desensitized is the right word to use. You know, there's an uncanniness to the monster in this.
Yeah.
It's a lot of interesting choices, right? Because the where and when does it take place? All right, so it takes
Bavaria. Even though everyone has a crazy transatlantic accent.
Now, how did you know it was Bavaria? Because Wikipedia said it? Because that's how I found out.
No, because I knew that it had to be like near Germany.
Because they say Frankenstein.
Herr Frankenstein, and because of the dancing and the costumes. And the like, that whole sequence is very like German.
But that's
Bavarian.
Not in the book, right? They're in Europe in the book, but I don't,
they're all over. Yeah, they're in Switzerland, Italy, Germany, Austria. Yeah. He goes everywhere.
But also, what time period does this movie take place?
That was my question, because when I was watching, I was like, okay, this is contemporary. It's like the 1930s.
Yeah,
but then when they're in the streets, I'm like, maybe this is supposed to be the 19th century?
I think it's doing...
I don't know.
We did an episode, Halloween, some Halloweens back, on It Follows. I think it's doing It Follows. I don't think you're... I think it gives you... Because like a
right,
because
It Follows, like, could be now, could be the 80s.
It could also be the future.
Could be, yeah.
Right. There's like some technology that you've never seen before, but then there's also like, you don't know when the fuck it is. I think that's true here. And it goes further in the sequel. Again, everything that's good about Frankenstein, he pushes further in the sequel. In the sequel, you see telephone lines, like poles with telephone lines.
Yeah.
How? What, like, well, and that's a choice. That's not outside. It's a set.
A village.
So he's deliberately fucking with you.
Yeah.
Because there's a Burgermeister, which is like, what?
Yeah. And now that you mention it, it's like there's a village. I mean, I guess it's supposed to be a quaint village. But it's like there's a village with a windmill.
Yeah.
And that would have been an outdated technology. But I mean, even if it was still in use,
it's
not of the moment.
What's great about this film, and I think a lot of the Universal Monster films, is that there's a great otherness. Mm-hmm. There's a great vague otherness.
These are American productions, right?
Yeah.
There's something about this and Dracula where it's like it's all sort of just vaguely European.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In a xenophobic
kind of way.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's like, right.
Which is interesting because Dracula itself is like comes out of like xenophobia about Eastern Europeans.
Yeah, he's a weird count that you're like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
it's true. But I also said, you tie into that old versus new, rational versus
old world versus new
old
world,
science versus magic.
You're right about I didn't think about the juxtaposition of there being like a science laboratory in a gothic castle.
Yeah.
Where it's like cutting edge technology juxtaposed with like something that's like hundreds of years old.
And then when the series goes on and they cross them over like the Avengers, they all are contemporary because they make Frankenstein meet Dracula and the Wolfman, which is contemporary. So, it's something similar to with the Wolfman to this is that Lawrence Talbot, the protagonist of the Wolfman, he's rich from a rich family. He lives in a tiny town where a lot of the economy is based on people working in his family's house, and they're like peasants. Like the way the barons like give them some beer or whatever, like, and they'll love, like, and also they're above the law in both the Wolfman and Frankenstein. The protagonist's father has a friendship with the law enforcement and kind of treats the law enforcement like shit, like the way the baron treats the Burgermeister. Yeah. So they're above the law.
Yeah,
it's really interesting. Again, it's like. It's society. It's class versus, you know, the rabble.
Well, even the fact
it's
that
all,
at the end, like, it's a bunch of the help coming to knock on the door to see if he's okay.
Right.
All the maids.
And they're all,
stuff.
Like, giggling. It's And that's the sort of, like, the reversal, like, the end of the queerness is banished because you see in the doorway, their future is not bright because they're out of focus, right? But out of focus, you see Victor and Elizabeth.
Yeah.
And then he says again to the House of Frankenstein to a son.
Yeah.
And that's how it ends. So it's almost like heteronormativity won out until the sequel where things get really gay.
Yeah.
The sequel has a character that's completely made up. Another mad scientist called Dr. Pretorius, who is, I'm going to quote the actor Mark Gatiss, who's an actor, writer, producer. He produced the new Sherlock. He himself is a queer filmmaker. He referred to the actor who played Dr. Pretorius as a screaming queen. Mm-hmm. It's such a queer performance. It's crazy. How you're kind of like, how do they get away with this? Because this is not subtle at all.
Well, it was coded. So as long as you didn't say it.
Yeah, but he like goes on a little date with the monster in that movie where like he's like, oh, hello, we're having a little.
Well, these were also pre-code, weren't they?
No, they're during the code.
Okay.
Oh, wait, no, code. I always forget when it begins. This is 31, so it might be. Let me look it up. Production code. Right, with production code, you had to hide things. Because they had all of these weird Christian bullshit about like when things could be or about like the kind of values you
have. And like, also like
certain, like real specific shit like bad guys have to lose and
also like really racist stuff like any character who's a Muslim must be a villain.
Yeah, it was bananas. That regulated the content of movies from 1930 to 1968. So there was the code was sort of there.
Interesting. Okay.
1930. This is 1931.
It's interesting that Bride of Frankenstein is a sequel where really it's just like the second half of the book.
Yeah, but still is very unfaithful.
Yeah.
He never learns to talk eloquently. He just speaks a little bit.
Like, I mean, it's so.
He says at the end, "We belong dead," which is his big line.
Yeah, wow. That's cool. Yeah, the book, the whole thing is he's like, he identifies with Satan in Paradise Lost.
Yeah.
He's been banished by God.
It's a totally different
thing. Yeah. And then he's, you know, it's like, make me a wife or I'll kill yours. Like, bride for bride, he says.
Well, let me ask you, what is your favorite adaptation of Frankenstein?
I like this one because it's, I don't think I'd sit down and like watch it, but I think it's like, I appreciate it for what it is. I kind of liked the Robert De Niro one, even though that calls itself Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, but it is also not fully faithful. I don't know that there is one, maybe at least not in film. Maybe there's a stage version that I haven't seen. There was a stage production of it that got good reviews a few years ago with, I think it was Michael C. Hall and another actor were like in the first act. And they the second switched. Act, the actors switched to like play up the connection.
I thought they
the
switched every night.
No, they switched between acts.
Interesting.
I think.
Well, there's a very famous scene in this movie at the end where they're in the windmill, and like there's the sort of like I guess gear or whatever in the middle, and they're both like framed by it, and you see the doctor, and then it cuts to like a graphic match to the monster, and it's just sort of it very. Obviously like uses that montage to show you they are like the same.
Yeah.
I was looking at my notes. Something else that I think really points to like the queer aspect of it is, do you remember that when they go and first meet the Baron and they don't tell him that he's what Henry's doing, he says, I know what the truth is. He's with another woman, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And it's like, no, he's not with another woman. He's with another man. Yeah. He's making a man. Like he has no interest in another woman.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting.
And the Baron's all he cares about is having a grandson, right? He talks about like, oh, like he has the this floral crown. He's like, I gave this to your mother on her wedding day, and then I hope you give it to your kid. And he just wants the lineage to continue.
Yeah.
So that's another thing too. It would be the end of, as Michelle Obama brilliantly put it, the affirmative action of generational wealth.
Right.
Right. That's what he wants to keep going.
Right, if you are in the...
If you're a Frankenstein, you're fine. You're above the law. You can do whatever you want.
What's going to happen if you're a land baron? Where does that land go if the line ends?
Right, exactly. I do love Little Maria when, like you said, the father walking through town. I think that's a very evocative image.
It is. It is.
For a movie made in 1931, this does not feel stale. It the camera's moving. There's dynamicism in the cinematography. There's a lot of close-ups, mm-hmm. which makes things feel very alive. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of naturalism in the performances. Like, I was surprised how natural Elizabeth felt, especially compared to, like, some of the other Universal movies as it goes on into, like, the 40s. It
depends. I feel like Frankenstein was very much doing, like, a stage actor performance.
Yes, yes. But I think some of the other people had a more natural... Well, I do think he... I think he's very, very big.
Yeah.
But the use of close-ups, I think, it really... The whole thing feels alive, mm-hmm. Which I think is always amazing about, like, really well-made older films. Because you can compare it to other things. Even Dracula. Like, Dracula's great for what it is, but it's not as good as this, and the performances are not as good. And I think you have to... And it's a lot of the same actors, so I think you have to give credit to James Whale. And also, you should... I'm going to cover it with Nadia. His Invisible Man is basically a comedy. It's mm-hmm. very, very campy. Yeah. Super campy. And it's Claude Rains plays the Invisible Man, as yeah. they say in Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah.
Oh, here's the line from Henry. There can be no wedding while this horrible creature of mine is still around. It's like it gets in between heteronormativity.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I guess I love every set. Every set is interesting. The mm-hmm. professor's office that's filled with skulls.
Yeah.
It's the German expressionism, like, or like the basement, like, dungeon in the tower where, like, the hallway behind it, like, looks, like, crooked. Everything's crooked.
Yeah.
I think Tim Burton gets a lot aesthetically from this kind of stuff. This would be my
Ed Wood.
Yes. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
This would be my favorite adaptation, even though I know it's not faithful.
I don't need things to be faithful. I don't mean to say that. I just, I don't know. I would love, I think what I would love to see is for once a faithful adaptation of the novel on film. Because I think it's just such a good book, and it would make a good movie if...
It's crazy that it can't happen, right? Because also a bunch of times... People have been like, this one's faithful, and then they're lying.
Like the Robert De Niro one, like, he doesn't really talk.
Right.
It's the most faithful, and then the whole third act is totally made.
And there's an English miniseries with James Mason, which they also was like, this is a real story, and it's also not.
Yeah. I guess I just want to see that movie be made.
This movie probably ruins the chances of that, yeah. because you can't get away from how iconic all of this stuff is.
Did you ever see, I've never seen it, so I'm just asking, that movie with Julia Roberts where she plays like his maid or something?
Oh, no, that's Dr. Jekyll.
Oh, you're right.
I have read the book Elizabeth Frankenstein. Is that what it's called? Where it's the story of Frankenstein through her point of view?
I've never read that.
What is it called?
Is it Lisa Frankenstein?
No, that was great. There's also all that, right? There's Rocky Horror, and like there's so many. Even like you could extend it to things like The Fly or Jurassic Park. Like the ideas of like recreating life. Elizabeth Frankenstein, and of course, young Frankenstein,
which is great. And then we haven't talked about the monsters yet.
Okay, The Dark Descent of Elizabeth Frankenstein by Kirsten White.
Was it good?
Yes, I liked it a lot.
I gotta check that out.
I wish I could remember more about it, because it's not just from her point of view. It's like, it makes Victor look like kind of an idiot, and she's really smart.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of like the Wicked book, but it's not cutesy. It's really interesting. It's sort of like She's not trying to play catch up like she is in the real book. Like, she's more involved in shit.
Okay.
Definitely worth watching. Okay. Or reading. What did you guys name? Oh, The Munsters.
Yeah. Because the Munsters is really all of them, right? But the mother and father are like styled after the creature and the bride of the creature.
Yeah. Well, we would call him the monster, right? In Universal talk, when we say the creature, we mean the creature from the Black Lagoon.
The monster.
You've embarrassed yourself.
Sorry.
That one, where we are...
In the book, he calls him the demon.
Okay.
Well, he calls him the creature, and then he starts calling him the demon.
Interesting. In the movie, he refers to him as it. Mm-hmm. Interestingly.
Yeah.
It's interesting because it begins with him already like mad, and then he has the struggle with them and he faints, and they bring him back home and he's sort of like fine then, and he's like, oh, I want to get married, and they treat it almost like a mania.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the book, even the minute he sees him, he's horrified by him, and then he immediately like banishes him. I love in the book that when he sees him, he runs away in horror and then goes to bed. So he's like, I'm going to will myself to nap because I'm so upset.
Well, I mean, what else?
And then the creature like wakes him up, like pulls the bed curtains back and wakes him up.
Yeah.
And then he freaks out.
There's
a really cool like hand illustration
of
that in one of the versions.
I think it would be worth your while to watch The Bride of Frankenstein.
I feel like I would really like it, especially, I know it's super campy. I know it's, like, it's such a queer thing.
And it has him with the hermit, the blind hermit, which is, like, some of the best stuff in the book.
Mm-hmm.
He never learns, he's never, like, eloquent, you know, but he does speak.
Yeah.
Even, like, going back to the idea of, like, the rational versus the traditional or whatever, like, that first scene where they're grave robbing, which is what a mood. I mean, like
Yeah. I laughed at that too, though. Where it's just like you see this really sad funeral, and then you just see these two goofballs, like spying, waiting for them to walk away. And then so there's like they dig up a body, then they go to the gallows and take down a fresh body.
Yeah.
But then he's like, oh, I can't use his brain because the neck was snapped. It's like, what parts are you using? It's all very unclear.
Yeah. Yeah.
Agreed. But I think that's fun.
It's campy and it's naughty and it's distasteful. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, beginning with a funeral and then, like you said, you see them and then you see, like, I love showing the labor behind death, too. Like, when the family goes away, you just see, like, this fat gravedigger, like.
Yeah.
He, like.
Smoking a cig and, like.
Yeah, yeah.
Burying him.
And then throwing the match. And then they come and dig it up.
Because that's the part that nobody wants to see
of
death. Like the part where your loved one is just being buried by like just some guy.
In general, like that's what makes the Universal Monsters, I think, interesting. There's a movie that people don't talk about is The Wolfman is actually not the first Universal Monster werewolf movie. They tried a different series that didn't go. And it's called Werewolf of London. It's before The Wolfman. And in that, there's a scene in it that made me think, like, this is like the perfect way to sum up Universal Monsters. There's like, they're in this like botanical garden or whatever, like, oh, there's all these interesting plants, and there's a Venus flytrap. And there's this like proper old lady who's like, has like a gentleman with her, and she's like got a walking stick, and she's like holding her pearls. And like, the Venus flytrap like catches a fly, and then she's like, ugh, disgusting. And then she leans in and like looks really, really closely, like she can't help.
And
she's smiling, like, oh my god, I gotta see this horrible shit. And then she comes back up, and she's like, oh, so terrible.
Yeah.
And it's like that's what these movies are. That's what horror movies are.
Right.
Right. It's you like to be freaked out a little bit. You like to get a little bit of the thing that you ignore all the time.
The pleasure of looking at death
and horror, and even though you might. In good company, say like, "Oh, that's distasteful."
I don't want to see that,
but you do want to see.
There's a curiosity there.
Yeah,
that's human.
Yeah, this was the first cinematic universe.
It's crazy.
Which we always think of Marvel as like a very successful cinematic universe, but there's other ones. People don't realize that David Lynch has a cinematic universe. Twin Peaks, Lost Highway. And Wild at Heart, I believe, are all in the same universe. That all follow the same rules of there's good and bad spirits and good spirits and stuff like that. This series does go on, and like the Avengers, like the first one that crosses over is Frankenstein versus the Wolfman, and which weirdly has Bela Lugosi as the Frankenstein monster.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have what's called the House of Frankenstein, which is all three of them. Frankenstein, the Wolfman, and the Mummy. Not the Mummy. The Mummy's not in it. Frankenstein, the Wolfman, and Dracula together. And then that has a sequel called The House of Dracula, which is like a direct sequel.
Okay. That was into the 50s, right?
No, that's like the late 40s. What we consider like The last film.
What isn't House of Frankenstein the one that they go see at the drive-in in Lolita?
I don't remember.
Kubrick's Lolita.
I saw that movie again recently too. I don't remember how do I put it? The youngest monster is the Creature from Black Lagoon, and the first Creature movie is 1954, and then there's a few sequels to that. I forget what year it is, but The Creature Walks Among Us is considered the last of the series. Mm-hmm. I'm doing an episode of Creature of Black Lagoon.
Okay.
With Janine. And we're going to find what we find with that. But just my sense of it now is I don't like that movie. I don't think it's very good. And I also really don't like The Mummy. I think The Mummy's a very bad movie. It's got some interesting things.
Like boring?
Well, it's the exact same plot as Dracula.
Okay.
It's boring. It's badly directed. I know some people love it. To me, it's really objectively the worst of all of these.
Is there a relationship at all between the original Mummy and then the 90s Brendan Fraser Mummy movies?
Yes, they're basically the same story.
Oh, they are? Okay.
Yeah, and those were directed by Stephen Sommers.
That doesn't remind me of Frankenstein.
No, it's not. It's like an action adventure. Like the mummy in that is like fighting with whatever. Imagine instead of like him like actively fighting and a hero like Brendan Fraser fighting him, he's like Dracula. He's like walking around being suave and seducing people.
Okay.
That kind of thing.
And then there's the Tom Cruise mummy.
Which was them trying to restart a cinematic universe.
Was that with the Elizabeth Moss Invisible Man?
No, that one is all on its own.
That's interesting because I think that's just a total departure, isn't it?
But yeah, that's nothing like the original Invisible Man. But I think it's fucking brilliant.
It is a good movie. It's a really good movie.
They've tried so many times. Like the first time they tried to redo the Universal Monster series was with this movie, Dracula Untold, but that was a big failure. So then they're
like in 2000.
Yeah. Right? So then they were like, no, that's not that wasn't what we were doing. And then they did The Mummy and they were like, no, this is us really trying. And that has like Russell Crowe in it as Dr. Jekyll. Like it does the Marvel thing of like throwing other, basically the character that
Brendan Fraser plays.
And that didn't go. Now, Abigail, which is loosely based on Dracula's daughter and has a Dracula character in it, was successful, and they're open to spinning that off into a cinematic universe. But they're also open to doing Abigail versus Megan, which I want more than anything in the world.
I was just
going to
say that sounds... It sounds like it's...
Well, they're both so campy.
They are, but it sounds like it's probably going to be more fun to talk about than actually watch.
Well, if you fucking have the balls to really do it, it could be. But just two little girls doing weird dances killing people...
That's fun.
It's bananas. Speaking of queer movies, Dracula's Daughter is sort of like a Nightmare on Elm Street 2 of the Universal Monsters series. It was considered not a good one, but then people were like, wow, this is really queer-coded. And now it's like a classic in that regard.
Ooh, okay.
It's Dracula's Daughter, and in it, though, she does not like being a vampire, and she wishes she wasn't a vampire. And her going out and sucking people's blood is represented as like, oh, I don't want to. But then, like, one night she goes out and she's like, she can't help herself. She goes out and she finds this young girl. And she's like, come back to my, apartment and I'm going to paint you. And then she, like, paints her in the nude and then, like, sucks her blood. And then she wakes up like, oh, I did it again. And it's like, being a vampire is so...
You big lesbian.
Yeah, it's so like, oh, no, I went out and found the young girl. Yeah, like, I told myself I wasn't going to do this anymore. It's totally. That's a fun one to watch. Okay. Dracula's Daughter. It's crazy. There's a lot of these. Yeah. Do you have any connection to like, when I was a kid, I was really into like, there was the Burger King toys and then like, there's always like they would hang out with Elvira. Remember they hung out with Beetlejuice at Universal Studios? Yeah. Oh, like, which somehow made sense. Beetlejuice hanging out with all them. Were you into that at all as a kid or any sense of that?
Yeah.
Did you ever dress as any of them for Halloween? You were a Dracula as a kid once. I remember them.
I don't remember it.
I remember the Widow's Peak. I remember mom drawing young. The Widow's Peak. On
yeah,
it.
I was
yeah.
very young. I was Dracula as a kid. I want to say I think I was the mummy once.
Oh, I think so too, yes.
I remember a mummy costume.
I was the Wolfman and I was Frankenstein.
I was never Frankenstein. I was going to say, oh, I was Beetle. Didn't we have a Beetlejuice? Wasn't I Beetlejuice for Halloween? Or was that you? Well, were you the Joker? I remember you being the Joker.
Yes. Yeah, I do remember. We had a Beetlejuice.
Like head with snakes. That
yeah,
was
it was a play. It was a role play toy.
Yeah. I think I was, I think I might have been Beetlejuice one year. I remember like, maybe this is something you could do with your other guests for this series. Like what immediately comes to mind mm-hmm. from your childhood when it comes with this property. And for me, I always think of the McDonald's Frankenstein bucket
head. Oh yeah, yeah, yes,
that's
yes.
just the thing that comes to me.
It's me, it's like exact, so it's like how could you be scared of that?
And
it's
it was
bucket.
The you know what I mean? It was the, your choices were the ghost, the jack-o'-lantern, or the Frankenstein,
right which is like the monster, but a monster always looks like Frankenstein.
Yeah,
like it's so clearly
yeah,
I love it. I love that stuff. I was a spooky kid, and it's cool that there are other levels in which you could watch this stuff and enjoy it, but there's part of me that just likes that it's monsters.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, obviously, like, as an adult, you could go dress up at a party, but do you remember the last thing you dressed up as a kid, like, as in that era of your life? Like, the last time you dressed up for trick-or-treating?
The last? It might have been the Tin Man. I was in, like, fifth grade. I was, like, way too old to be the Tin Man. I remember, like, once I got to middle school, everything just kind of gets half-assed. I vaguely remember dressing up as Captain Kirk for something.
Huh, weird.
But it wasn't a store-bought costume. I just had the badge, and I wore, like, one of Dad's turtleneck gold things. So I guess, yeah, probably the Tin Man. And then I got back into dressing up, like, in college when it was, like,
Right.
Yeah.
My
what
last
you?
Would be Obi-Wan Kenobi as a kid. But I was like in sixth
grade.
That
was the same year I was Tin Man.
Probably, yeah, yeah.
There's a picture of us together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's also like kind of lonely that I was Tin and sad that I was Tin Man with no other. There was no Scarecrow, no Dorothy, or no Lion.
You didn't, but no, it's cool. you live out loud.
Yeah, it was. I feel like you teamed up. Weren't a bunch of you Star Wars people?
I think our cousin Brendan was Luke.
Yeah, I remember there being a few of you.
Yeah, yeah. Halloween. Isn't just give you the warm and fuzzies.
I want to remember now, like, what I was for every year, but I don't think I could do that.
I remember the first thing I ever was, and when I say remember, I mean I have this vague sense of it, was a little devil.
Oh, I remember the picture.
Yeah, yeah.
You're making like a funny face in
yeah,
the picture.
Yeah, and I got like a little pitchfork or whatever.
Yeah, it was cute.
It's cute for a little child to
yeah,
do.
Yeah, I have no memory of it, but I have a memory of a picture of me as Dracula.
Yeah.
And mom and dad drew the Widow's Peak on
my But it's so interesting.
Head.
It shows the ubiquity of it, because as a child, like, you, what did you know
I didn't
of Dracula?
Ask to be Dracula, yeah.
But, like, you also know what Dracula is.
Yeah.
Even though you like Dracula, he says, "I want to suck your blood" or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, this has been PCMC. This is Halloween 2024. We'll be back next week with some more Universal Monsters stuff. Anthony, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We end every episode by saying
"Go bye bye."